Diamond Heart 7, Saturday, August 29th, 2009, afternoon session.
Guess what? We're going to start on our feet. So let's just shake a little, just loosen up your jaw, your shoulders, your hips, I'll bet, your wrists and your hands. Okay. Oh, so we're going to go over our five movements. They've actually gone through a little evolution since we last did them. Linda Creer, who developed them, has refined them from a lot of teaching she's done with them this spring. And so at Hamid's retreat in Asilomar, we learned some new elements or variations, so, but you'll recognize most of it. So we're going to start with the salutation at the beginning, the four movements bringing the breath down through the centers. And this is the same as we learned it before. So begin with an inhale. Hands together above the head, and then the Aum sound. Aum. So the three directions with the three centers, up with the forehead, out with the chest, and down the belly center. So the next time is with a whisper. And then under your breath the third time, and then silent inner the last time. So just take a moment, sense the centering in yourself, feel your feet, feel good balance on your feet. And then she's changed the name of this next part. It's the same thing, it's the integration breath now, but with the diamond, with your hand, thumbs together, fingertips crossed, open. And a little bit slower than we've done it, down. And bringing your arms down to your belly. And again, straightening up the legs. Keep the legs straight. And exhale down to your belly. Again. Okay. And the sun breath. Breath that's originating in the center of your belly. Imagining the air is coming in the center and expanding the belly. Inhaling through your nose, letting the torso fill, and then exhaling out your mouth. And just letting yourself gently find different places, different directions in your torso with the breath. Up the front of your body, under the ribs. Up the back, into your sacrum, under the ribs and the back and the shoulder blades. That's okay to let your body adjust slightly, to let the air go more into that area and then to one side. Making space. And inhaling, letting the breath go down the legs into the ground. And then in all directions, three-dimensional sense of the body. And once more. And the integrated breath again. Hands together and really feeling the pull down into your belly. So it's that pull is part of what's bringing you right back into centeredness in your cough. Okay. Now these next two change a little bit. We did them bending over before, but we're going to do them a little simpler. What's going to happen is you're just going to, if you want, you can have your feet a little bit farther apart than you might initially for the first movements. But the idea is you're just going to sit as if you were going to sit onto a chair. Just sit a little bit so your knees are bent, your ankles are bent, your hips are bent all in here, but you're still straight up. And then we're going to do the pulses, the pelvic pulses at the bottom of the torso, at the perineum area. And we're going to do them with the breath. So the way it'll go is you're going to inhale, inhaling up, pulling the pelvic floor up and straightening your legs. Bring it all the way up as high, as tight, as fully pulled up as you can. And then you're going to exhale, soften the knees, come down and just let it go. And even press out gently against the bottom of your pelvis. So it's a pulling up and tightening and then releasing and pushing down. Okay, so we'll do that three times together. So. Just a couple of the notes about it. It's like it's working the muscles, the Kegel muscles, for those who've done that exercise. It's also related to the muscles that you use when you stop peeing. If you stop your pee, you're tightening those muscles. And if you want to, when you're coming up, instead of just doing a steady pull-up, you might do it tighten, 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 like in little bursts. If that feels easier for you to really get the full contraction, just to feel that area get tight, and then release. So let's just do twice more, just to play with it however you want, but just feeling that part of your torso. And yeah, so that's a part of us, and then you can just come back up to standing. That's a part of us that we have a lot of unconscious tension in a lot of the time. It's the base of our body, our torso, and we're just holding it a lot. So the contracting is really exaggerating that so that you can release it and actually get more of a softness and a space down there. Okay, the integrated breath. Opening and bring it into your belly, and once more. Okay. Again, this one is the same variation from the last time. We again just drop into the bended knees. And this time, remember what we're doing with this one is we're contracting the abdominal muscles back towards your spine. So your spine stays straight, and that's the tricky part. So you don't want it to go like that, where you're pushing the spine out. You want to keep the spine straight. So, but we're going to do it with the breath, with each time with the breath and with straightening the legs, just as we did with the pelvic pulsing. So it'll go. And if you want to, you can put your hands here just to feel the contraction under your hands and then the softening as the belly releases. Couple more times. And once more. Okay, stand. Just release a little. Let that area... Yeah, the idea is to have just that area that's tightening up. Not your whole body tightening up. Not your perineum fossa. It's just the front of the body on that one. Okay, integrate a breath. Okay, this one stays the same as we worked with before. So letting your feet walk a little bit farther apart and beginning to let your weight shift side to side, softening the knees so it's not on top of the legs, but it's dropping down into your legs. And then you can begin to have a little rotation in the hips. So you begin to feel a figure eight in your pelvis. That you make that from your feet. Your feet are where you pivot. So your torso is just staying as a nice, easy, whole piece. And then when you're ready, you can let your hands come in. Letting the leading hand be up. Keep your focus in near you right now. You might want to watch your hands. So you can just feel the whole body gliding. And you're really working with the joints, softening the joints, your knees, your ankles, your spine, breathing, particularly the base of your skull. Might tip your head a little bit just so that it doesn't get locked on the top of your spine, but it can float and glide with the rest of the body. And then you can begin to let movements open and change however you like, but keeping the wholeness of your body. Play a little bit with the rhythm if you want to change the pacing. Keep your breathing easy. If you can, inhaling in the nose and exhaling out your mouth. You can also open up your eyes to begin to take in the space, so long as it doesn't throw you off center. Just pause. Just pause and just breathe. Sense yourself. Feel your support. Do you feel your legs under you? They should be. Take a look around just to see space. And then continue. So we're practicing holding a grounded, centered, whole feeling and being able to take in information through your body, through your eyes, through your sensing. And begin to let it get smaller. Come back towards the center. Feel your balance coming into alignment over both legs. Feel the movement. Some movement continues inside, even when your body is pretty still on the outside. Your breath, and there's still balance happening as a dynamic process in the body. Okay, and the integrative breath. Okay, last movement, and this one has changed somewhat since I originally taught it to you. I realize I had it a little wrong to begin with. So this one is a leaning and pushing off of one foot, so you're balancing on the other, and you kind of let your arms, first just feel the sense of the swinging of your arms, with like you're tipping, and just, there's a natural way the arms would swing in the direction away from the leg that you push off of. And we're going to exaggerate that by taking the first arm and really letting it go out. So you got the leg going in one direction, the arm going in the other. And then from here, you let that arm come all the way up and stay up, and then the other arm come up, and you have this position we had. Just take a moment to feel this position. You want to relax your shoulders as much as possible. Your arms, your hands are facing if they can be. Your eyes are a little bit up. Your face is open. And feel the X. Feel the extension through your legs and through your arms. This is about really opening up the body and letting it stretch, but not extreme, just stretch. And we'll take three breaths. And as you inhale each breath, you extend a little farther out your arms. And then as you exhale, we'll drop the arms. But so when you, and you're doing it with your eyes open, your mouth open. So it's both, oh, three times, not dropping the arms, three times, just as you exhale, you just let the extension soften a little. So it goes. So you're really opening it. And then release. And okay, and the pushing off again. This time feel the arm gets a combination of pushing and reaching. Woo! Feel that, and then up, and then up, and feel the X, and and now the sound. And this time up and up and X. Okay. Bring your feet together. Yeah, it brings a little lightness in. Okay. And the integrated breath. Eyes stay forward on this. And the closing four times with the salutation. through the four centers, just silent but breathing, and your eyes just out nice and level, and letting this quiet the body and bring everything back to center. Okay, so. Sense your arms and legs. Sense the space around you and your cough and the space inside you. And then find your seat for the meditation. I was sitting back there this morning, looking up here and seeing this little gold door and this white wall. It's kind of a change in the context of the teaching, but something appropriate that they found gold for us here as we're always trying to see as much as we can about the truth of where we are. And what we're working on this weekend is really a very central principle of this work. In the first Diamond Heart book, it's referred to as the theory of wholes. And that's often what it's called, the theory of wholes. And we call it a theory because it's not proven scientific fact. There hasn't been that kind of research to be able to call it a fact about how all human souls unfold. But it's a theory based on a lot of experience with a lot of people during the last 30, 35 years of work. And it's pivotal in our work because it connects in a very direct and precise way our normal everyday experience with the depths of our true nature. And it's, from that perspective, one of the elements that makes this work fairly unique in that we can start with almost any place that we find ourselves in our daily life, as Regina was talking about at the end of the morning. Whatever kind of issue or struggle or conflict or concern we have in our daily life with the externals and the simple things of our life. And we can start there and be curious and be interested and really open to what's going on. What are the dynamics there? What's pushing that? What's making it be a conflict for us or making it be a concern? And keep inquiring into that. Not orienting towards fixing it in terms of making the conflict go away, but to actually see what is that conflict? What is it that we believe is going on that we're having difficulty? that's making this feel like a problem or an issue. And if we stay with it and really see as much as we can about it and experience as directly as much as we can about how it's affecting us, how it actually works in our consciousness now, in the moment, almost inevitably, we will be led deep into ourself, into a more fundamental level of our experience, into the immediacy and some kind of fundamental isness, which brings us in touch with presence, with some quality, some sense of being. And that what we find is that the issue we start with, the topic we start with, always has a specific connection to the kind of experience of being that we arrive at. It's amazing. And even when we learn about it, our mind will tend to try and fit our experience into that and say, oh, I'm working on this issue, it must be that I'm going to find this at the bottom. It doesn't always happen that way, though. It's not something we can plan or make a goal out of. But there does seem to be something something reliable about that movement into ourselves. That, as Regina said, if we approach it with sincerity and with curiosity and openness, over time, not necessarily immediately, over time, something will be revealed and we will begin to come in touch with something in ourselves, in our own nature, that we were missing in some way in that original concern or problem. We might not have even known we were missing it at the beginning. But when we find it, when we're in touch with it, we recognize that the initial problem has totally changed. It might not look the same at all. Might not be a problem at all. Or it might have a clear understanding of what's really going on. So as far as I know, there aren't many paths of spiritual work that have this kind of trajectory down into our personal experience in a way that they really integrate what's going on in our life with the depths of who we are as a being, as a beingness. Traditional practices of meditation tend to have us go into meditation to let go of our life so that we can find our ground. And that can work, can be very effective. But it doesn't necessarily help us understand the relationship between the surface and the depth. And doesn't necessarily bring about a kind of integration, a way that the depth can then move back to the surface and affect how we're living our life. So this theory of wholes is very pivotal in that movement and that dynamic in our soul. So it's one of the reasons why we wanted to spend a weekend to focus on it, just to give us as much of a experiential sense of it as possible. It's not work on a specific aspect, but it's more a general orientation, really. And as Regina and I were planning this, we were also seeing that it's a very central piece as you work with this in your own process and have some experience of it. And it may not look like the perfect movement through a hole, if there's such a thing. There's all different ways to experience a hole, to move through it, to find what's on the other side, to even deal with recognizing it. Everybody has many different ways that can happen. But when you do work with it some and have some experience of turning toward yourself to these places that feel like emptiness, the places that feel like a gap or something missing, and over time have the experience of how they can open and become a well, as Peter said, or a doorway back to something real in us, that supports our basic trust. That supports our sense that we don't have to move away from what's difficult, but we can actually move toward it, sink into it, open up to it, and that that will lead us someplace that is nourishing to our soul. So it felt appropriate after we worked with the Living Daylight and the Basic Trust to focus on this piece. So we, because it's a very practical piece. It's something that we can actually make use of in our ongoing work, in our ongoing inquiry, ongoing exploration of what's happening in our life. So as Regina said this morning, talked about some of the different ways that this hole, a hole develops, the way we get cut off, disconnected from our nature, leaving a gap, leaving some way that we're missing something. And one way of seeing it is that when we have on a visceral, fundamental level, not so much a mental level, but just in a very visceral level, we have a sense that something's missing in us, then there's an instinctive and a natural tendency to compensate for that if we feel that it's something necessary for our survival, necessary for living and developing. So in a sense, it's a very natural thing that the soul, when it feels something is lost that's basic to it, that it will find a way to compensate. Just like if you were to lose or break a leg and then be on crutches, you wouldn't have the same mobility. So you'd have to compensate for that and find out how you could work around it and do what you need to do. Same way, the ego, as the structuring of the soul, is extremely inventive in how to compensate for what it feels is missing in itself, for these qualities. And she spoke well about some of the different ways that we go about compensating. One of the pieces that's central in that developmental process that creates the challenge with this territory is that we compensate, but we actually tend to forget that we lost something. So it's as if we compensate with the crutch for having broken our leg, but after a while we forget that the leg was broken, that it ever was a different way, and we start living as if walking on a crutch is the natural way to live, and we think that's who we are. We've forgotten that we could walk without a crutch. So that's part of what happens with the holes, is that we forget. It's really actually one of the most fundamental pieces, that we forget that we've lost something of who we are. We come to believe that we are someone who doesn't have that. And so the compensation is to make do without it, but with the assumption that ground zero is that it doesn't exist in us. So from that place, it feels totally natural to be looking for where we could get it from. Because it ain't here. You know, if I don't feel love in myself, then why would I go looking in myself for love? I'm going to look elsewhere for love. I'm going to look for a situation where it seems to create love, or look for a person who loves me. Or I'm going to try and make myself act loving and pretend that I love. But it's all based on the very strong belief that there is no love here. So I'm doing the only thing I can do. And this is how we are, for the most part, as adults, around many of the issues in our life. And how we use, as Regina said, we use other people to fill our holes. Very, very fundamental in relationships that, you know, you want your partner to support you. And it seems totally natural. They should support you. We're in a relationship together, so you should support me. And, you know, so we are noticing the ways we don't get supported. How come you always take the other person's point of view? You never take my point of view. You're always fighting with me. How come you don't help me? I don't even think you want to help me. And we feel hurt, we feel disappointed, we feel need for that support, and we tend to feel entitled to it. After all, you're my partner. So isn't part of being my partner that you're going to support me? So there's nothing wrong with this. This is a natural kind of way that we operate. And there is a level in which it's true. If you're in a relationship, part of being in a relationship is you work together, you help each other. There's some basis for that. So you can do couples work and find out how to get better communication and support. That's a useful level to work on. But if that issue is a constant issue for you, and it tends to make it hard to see the truth of what's there in the relationship because you're always sensitive to support or no support, then it might be the basis of seeing that it's not just about the relationship. It's something deeper. So the point I'm making here is that it's not easy a lot of the time to recognize the territory of our holes, because there's such a deep conviction in our familiar identity that ground zero is we don't have a lot of things. We're not conscious of it, but it's just built in. Because in many cases, our ego structure developed without those things ever being there because they'd already been cut off. So we developed knowing ourselves without them. We never got them reflected to us. We got a lot of attack when they did come up. And so even if we experience those qualities as an adult, they're just an experience. We don't actually believe they're part of who we are. And so they remain just something that can come and go. Somebody asked me at the end of the morning, well, I've had some experiences of a certain quality of essence, but I don't remember going through a hole. And the fact is, yes, we can all have experiences of essence without going through a hole. And that's because, in a sense, essence is always there in our field. It doesn't, as Regina said, it doesn't go anywhere. What happens is that we get cut off from it. And our sense of who we are doesn't include that quality. So it's still there in our field in some way, and it may be even affecting us, but we can't recognize it. We can't actually open up to it and know it as part of who we are. So we can have experiences in a session or at other times where circumstances arrange themselves in such a way that we experience a quality that we weren't aware of before. And it might not even be a difficult process. It might just open up and suddenly we feel this sweetness we've never felt before. Or we might feel this solidity and groundedness and will. But it will 99% of the time just be an experience that then goes away and you come back to being your normal self. So going through a hole has more to do with actually working what in you, in your identity, stops that quality from being there. So, in other words, we can bypass our identity sometimes and have these wonderful experiences. But our identity comes back strong, and then the quality is not there anymore. So whenever we're being ourself, we don't have that quality. If we can get out of the way, then we can have that quality, which supports a certain orientation to spiritual work, which is just get myself out of the way, and then I have all these wonderful qualities. But that doesn't really integrate very well into our life because we actually want to be ourself in our life. And we tend to be ourself, whether we like it or not, most of the time. So, if because we've been focusing on it in a weekend like this, or because in your own process you get frustrated with constantly trying to get the outside to fill your need and it's not working, you might decide that it would be useful to turn your attention away from the outside toward yourself. What's actually happening here? So I just want to acknowledge that it's not necessarily easy to do that, particularly in personal interpersonal dynamics, but often in other situations too. If we have some frustration about something not happening outside, it's not easy oftentimes to turn just toward ourselves, because our mind tends to be very convinced that if that would just change, it would be better. If that was different, I could get what I need. If that was the right person, then I could relax. Or if I could just fix myself, then I'd be better off. So it's not easy to make that turn with many areas of our life. But it's a central part of actually seeing what's really going on. Part of what's going on is out there, but a big part of what's going on is here. What's happening when we are trying to get something? When we have a lot of juice around some situation and we're feeling the intensity in ourselves about needing something and we're being frustrated. Notice you could look at it too even when you're getting what you want from the outside. But usually we're not interested then. If we're getting it from the outside, then everything's great. We don't feel any problem. The hole might still be there, but we're getting what we want. So I'm not asking any questions. You know? So we start with when we're frustrated because that's easier. There's more impetus to look elsewhere. But at some point it's a good thing too to look at the places where you're getting what you think you need and see if there's a hole there as well. I was working with a student just this week and she was talking about a situation where she was doing an audition and she felt very confident about her her capacity to sing and to act in this audition. But as soon as she got on stage, her attention was so caught up in what the response would be that it was very difficult for her to continue to function in a way that she felt confident about before she got up there. And as soon as it was over, she felt almost a desperate need to know what people thought, know what a few particular people thought. So there was this almost a compulsive need to get that information, to get that response. And it was very hard to turn back toward herself because the first thing she felt in turning toward herself was that need. So this might be one thing that we encounter. When we turn back, the first thing we might encounter is just the motive, the movement, the energy to get that thing from the outside. Could be as simple as we go get cookies out of the closet. You know, whenever we start to feel a little something, we're not even sure what it is, off to the closet, get a couple cookies, then things calm down. And it's, you know, the first thing we, if we turn towards ourselves, we just feel this, you know, that hunger, I just got to eat something. We don't feel whole particularly. We don't feel any of the deep psychological things. We just feel, nah, 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 I got to have to put something in my mouth. So the first level of what we feel might be just that movement out, that movement to get something, the movement to full, to take something in or to find something or to have something, which could be mild or it could be very intense. And that's not always necessarily what we'll find first. But I just want to mention it because sometimes it is the first thing, particularly if there's a strong issue for you with charge in it. Or it might be, on the other hand, instead of getting something, it might be anger. Like if you're having a situation where you're angry at somebody and you're convinced they've done something wrong to you, then you might turn to yourself to see, well, what's going on with me? And all you can feel is, goddamn fucking son of a bitch, I want to kill that guy. And you keep telling yourself over and over again what they did. And that's all you find when you turn toward yourself. You don't find any hole or anything, you know. You just find this energy. So that might be part of what you encounter, is the intensity of the movement toward the object, what you have as an object. And what's driving you to that, it's hard to even get close to because you just feel the intensity, the movement out. So you might need to just start with that and really just feel the energy in that, feel the quality in that, feel the movement of it, feel it in your body, feel your mind going, going, going. But feel the energy, not be focused on the object itself, but just feel you doing that activity. And if you can stay with it, gradually you may be able to see, okay, what's behind that? Where's that coming from in me? What's pushing that? And that can lead you back into a little deeper into yourself in terms of what's moving this whole dynamic. And that's where we can begin to actually experience or sense into the feeling of something missing. The feeling that there's something I don't have that I need. Something that feels very disturbing that I need to whack somebody because it's so painful or it's so upsetting or it's so something. So you start to recognize the underlying state in you. Now, sometimes if you're trying to get, say, we go back to this issue of support from your partner. If you're trying to get support and you're feeling like you need their support, they're not standing up behind you, they're not helping you out, and it feels really upsetting, And then you come back to feel yourself. And you might ask yourself, well, do I feel a lack of support in myself? Part of you might say, well, but that's not the point. I need the support from out there. It's not in here that I need support. I need support out there. Well, that's fine. But when you don't get it out there, what happens in here? Are you just disappointed that you don't get support? Or does it actually affect your sense of yourself? Do you start feeling shaky or helpless or collapsed or panicky? If it's any of those things, then it obviously indicates that there's some lack in here. It's not just something you want from the outside, but it's not related to who you are. Remember, the whole is losing something fundamental about who you are. So if it is support, and you can begin to sense, okay, yes, I'm not feeling support right now. Right now, in this moment, I'm not feeling it. What does it feel like? That feels like something's missing in me. Something's not okay. And you might begin to recognize, as we saw with Will, that it could be something in the lower half of your body. It could be a hole in your belly, hole in your pelvis. Could be emptiness in your whole lower body. That the place where you intuitively feel supported or grounded is not there. So, as we talk about a lot, a major part of turning toward yourself in this dynamic is to sense yourself, sense your body, sense your energy, sense your physical immediate experience. And sometimes that's relatively easy and you can recognize something about it. Other times it's difficult because you're not aware of it or because there's a lot of other stuff going on. And this is really an important area with the sense of a whole. On one level, the physical, direct, immediate experience is of a whole, is some emptiness inside us. It can feel like a hole with walls, and it goes deep, or it could just feel like some kind of emptiness, a gap. If it was just that, this whole process might be a lot simpler. If we could just get in touch with that and stay with that. But being with a whole for all of us involves much more than just the direct bodily experience. In that, there's a whole lot of stuff around our wholes. A whole lot of history, a lot of reactions, a lot of associations, a lot of judgments, a lot of beliefs that kind of wrap around and in many cases cover over each one of our wholes. Not to mention the movement away from the whole, which we started with. But even if you can get beyond that movement away and start to actually sit with the sense of missing something, you'll almost immediately start hitting some of this shit around it. So one of the first things we hit are judgments. Oh my God, what's wrong with you? You're missing? You don't have any support in yourself? After all these years, and you call yourself an adult? What's your problem? So there might be judgments about, you don't want to let anybody see that. Nobody wants to be around some little collapsed structure. I thought the whole thing you've been doing all your life is trying to learn how to take care of yourself, and you still don't know how to take care of yourself. All these kind of judgments might be there around starting to feel a lack in a very direct way. So judgments are a big piece that can keep us away from, make it difficult to stay with, to just be open to, much less interested in, the experience of deficiency, of something being lacking. We also often have emotional reactions. Regina talked about that some this morning, but like being coming toward a hole or actually beginning to sense it might be scary. As Jim said, you know, you might have a strong belief that you are a good person, and as you start to come toward a hole that makes you feel bad, it feels like there's something wrong with you, or that you're even evil, or you've got hatred, or you're dangerous, or you're hurting other people, or whatever that idea might be, might go really against your beliefs about yourself. And so it could be very scary to actually open up to what this hole is going to bring forward. So often there's feelings of disappointment or of ridicule or shame. Shame's a big one around a lot of our holes. And when we start to hit that shame, it can just make us want to stop going there. So besides the reactions emotionally or judgmentally, a big thing that is wrapped around most holes are certain assumptions and beliefs about the quality, about missing it, about ourselves, if we have that thing missing. Also, first, even before the beliefs for the moment, are the associations. And one thing that's very strongly associated with many of our holes is being little. Is that these holes, because, as Regina said this morning, the disconnection happened in many cases very early. When we start to get close to the actual sense of missing something, it will often bring up an association of being a little kid. Being lost, being helpless, being alone, a child that's weak, a child that is not smart, a child that doesn't know what to do. And that in itself can bring reactions and judgments. So we might even believe that the reason we don't feel support inside is because we feel like a little kid. How's a little kid supposed to feel grounded in this big adult body when it's much too small for it? So we might even think that it's because we feel like a little kid that we're having this deficiency. But then along with that feeling, that identity with the child, will go a lot of different beliefs about what it meant or what happened to us, why that child felt that way. Beliefs about, well, my father liked my brother better, and he always chose him. He went to his games, but he didn't go to mine. Or he didn't seem to notice me when he was into my brother. So I believe that my father didn't support me. And so it's hopeless because I didn't get his support, and I'm never going to get his support because he's dead now. So there might be a whole belief like that around support because of that history. And it will tend to hold things tight in a certain way. Or there could be a belief that I wasn't smart enough and I didn't know enough. I didn't have enough information. If I just knew what was going on, I never could figure out what was going on in my family. So how was I supposed to feel grounded or feel supported? Because everything was changing all the time and I couldn't understand what was going on. So you might have a belief that you don't have grounding or you don't have support because you're not smart enough. And so you're always trying to get information in order to feel like you'll know enough to feel grounded. So if you really believe that thing about not being smart enough, it will tend to give you a lot of motivation to keep trying to get information from the world. But all of these beliefs and assumptions will tend to keep your experience of the lack in relation to your history, in relation to what kind of person you are, what you're doing or not doing, what you got or didn't get. And they'll tend to keep you away from the sense that what's really going on here might be your disconnection from yourself. That might be actually more fundamental than what happened to you, or what kind of person you think you are, or who liked you and who didn't like you. So these are the traps, in a sense, some of the places that we can get caught when we turn towards ourselves and pay attention to what's going on inside, because these are strong beliefs. And even when we kind of go back into our history to try and see more, we can just add to those beliefs. And we can get caught in those and go round and round explaining to ourselves why we are the way we are. And why I'm trying so hard to get this thing from the outside is because I never got it from my mother. And I really just need to go to a better therapist who can help reparent me. So then I'll have a good mother, and then I won't have to get it from my partner anymore. And so on. So that a lot of the things that we encounter around the whole can just keep feeding the cycle of orienting out. Not that some of that isn't useful, but it becomes a barrier if it stops you from actually opening to something deeper about what's really going on. So part of the way we can recognize whether we're getting stuck or not is by whether we feel like we're caught in some kind of process of trying to manipulate ourselves, trying to figure out what happened or what we should do or how to improve ourselves or how to fix the situation. All those will be indicators that we're caught in something rather than just being able to settle into what's actually here. So how do we do that when there's all this shit around the hole? There isn't a simple, it's not a way to do it. It's not like, okay, I see all that shit, I just got to push it out of the way and go right for the hole. It doesn't actually work that way. You have to be able to open up to all this shit because it's part of what's there in you. Be open to it, look at it, try and understand it. Understand, well, why do I believe that? What happened or what made me get fixed on that belief about myself or about this lack? But we don't want to accept any of these things as the truth about ourselves. They're just some of the things that are involved here. So it's like we give them attention, we open to them, particularly if we've never felt them, we've never been aware of that belief before, it's important to see it. Never been aware that that's been part of what's holding our structure together, is that deep belief I have about myself, that my father loved my brother better, and he was never going to pay attention to me because my brother was around all the time. And I can see how that's affecting a lot of the way I deal with things, because everybody else is my older brother, and I expect them to get support and not me. So that might be very useful to see it, but not to stop there. To see that every time we get close to this loss of support, we start feeling like a child, but not to stop there. So what it means is that we see these different pieces, and once we see them and see as much as we can about them, then we need to bring our attention back to our direct experience. Okay, I see that whole thing about my father. Now come back to what is the actual experience around support right now. Does that change it? How is it in my body now? What's going on? Do I feel more support, less support? Does that affect it? So we keep coming back. So in a sense, we're discriminating. We're beginning to separate those different pieces of stuff. See them so that we can understand them or have some clarity about them, and then separate them. They're not actually the direct experience. They're all the stuff that makes it hard to feel directly what's here. One tricky place here that can happen, especially for us spiritual practitioners, is that we get to a certain place, we see the history, and we go, that's just history. I know it's not true. I know I have will in me. So just forget the history and let's focus on what can get my will back here. Or let's really practice having will. So it's like a spiritual jumping over, because teachers have been saying for months that will is part of our identity, our true nature. So let's just go see that that's history. It doesn't matter. It's not true. Push it out of the way, and let's focus on finding our support. Can't do that either. You have to just be with what's really there. And you may not be able to explain it, why it's there or what's happening, but you come back to what is here. And it might be that once you've seen some of this history, things relax and the whole goes away at that particular moment. It's gone. And you feel relaxed and you feel okay and present. And you continue your life. And then some situation brings up this issue again of support. Something happens with your partner. Issues back again. Feelings back again. So now you go back and you sense it again. And now the history piece isn't so strong. But maybe there's some kind of a judgment that's hard to get away from. You look at that. And then this time maybe the hole's still there. So this is a process that doesn't happen in any particular order. But at a certain point, you may begin to have the holding and the space just to be more with the emptiness, more with the sense of something missing, where it's not so full of the beliefs or the associations or the judgments or the emotional reactions. It's more just this empty, vacant or sense of a gap, sense of a cavern or a cave or a hole, something that has really a feeling of a piece of you scooped out, something not there. So when you get closer to that, then you actually want to see, what's it like when you've gotten all the associations and interpretations out of the way? Is it painful? Is it uncomfortable? Is it scary? Could be any of those things. Is it gray or black or clear? Or is it blank? Or is it desolate or barren or dry or cold or huge or bottomless? These are all different kind of ways that that emptiness might actually present itself. When you're more in contact with it, notice, are you inside it or are you just looking at it? Is it inside you or does it take up all of you? Do you want to get away from it? Or is it okay just to hang out with it? If you do want to get away, is it because of what it means about you, or is it because of how it actually feels? And when you do feel it directly, how does it actually affect you? Might be painful as you feel the lack in yourself. Might make you feel sad. It might make you feel very quiet and still. It might actually make you feel a subtle joy, because after all this time of decades of your life, you're able to just be with something that has always been there, but that you've been avoiding. Maybe you didn't even know it was there, but when you find it, you realize it's been there forever. So the more you're able to allow, make space for all these things that are part of the lack, all the stuff, and gradually see all that and come more towards the direct missing sense in yourself, the less generally you'll feel a desire to go away from it. The more you'll recognize that it's something about you that you're actually experiencing, something very precious or special about your experience that actually is not that much about anything going on outside of you. Because this is really what's most important, is that you're missing something about you. You're missing something about the reality of what it is to be yourself, to actually be able to just fully show up as a human being. There's a sense that something got lost. So, this is some of the territory, the possibility in moving from that outward orientation with our issues, with our conflicts and problems and things that we're needing in our life or wanting, to actually see more about what is there in us underneath the surface. It's really about that turning toward our experience to see what the truth is. And it's, even though we present as a progression, like there's a place to go to, it's really not a goal-oriented thing. It's really, at each step of the way, it's just about being with what you find in yourself and wanting to see that. So if you want to get something from the outside, you're just with that. If you have a lot of judgment about yourself, you recognize that. See what that is. See how it affects you, the judgment. Make space for yourself from it if you feel ready and want that, so that you can be with what else is there in you. If the history is what comes up, you just allow that and see it. But notice whether you get caught into believing that's who you are, as if that's the end of the story, or can you just be curious about it, to see it, and hold that maybe there's more to what's here than just the history. So, let's do some individual exploration. We're going to get into groups of two again and do three repeating questions. 10 minutes each for each of them. First question. Tell me something you believe you are lacking. Tell me something you believe you are lacking. Just let whatever comes up come out. Don't think about it or try and figure out the right answer. Second question. What happens in you when you feel deficient? What happens in you when you feel deficient? So this is trying to make space for whatever. I covered a bunch of different things that could be in there that could happen around this territory. So just see what happens in you. And then the third question is, tell me a way you experience deficient emptiness. Tell me a way you experience deficient emptiness. That means an emptiness which has some kind of lack, something missing in it. Okay, so that'll be an hour, and we'll come back together by 5:30. So, and we got recording happening. Okay, so time for questions, comments. Over there, Lily.
I felt almost something akin to rage with this exercise. Like, I felt so much anger coming up around. It felt kind of like a superego defense, like with like I was beating my lack with like a baseball bat.
Yeah.
And it felt really strong and proud and big.
Like you were going to destroy it.
I was going to destroy it.
Okay.
It was like a stronger piece of myself was coming in and defending.
Defending. What was it defending?
It just felt like these the feelings of lack, like defending against having to feel that way, having to feel small.
Okay.
Like I don't deserve to have to feel that way.
Okay. Okay.
It was like a protective mechanism coming in, like so a big person coming in to like rescue the little person.
Right. So there was something very dangerous or devastating about feeling the lack?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, and I guess I still don't get exactly why. I don't understand how it could be helpful to go into that.
Okay.
Somehow it feels like it might be reinforcing it.
Reinforcing what?
the sense of smallness, of lack,
uh-huh.
of deficiency. Like
okay.
it's giving it energy
okay.
and making it bigger.
Okay.
And so there's a lot of like resistance and doubt to going into it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this like ferocity coming out.
Yeah,
which
sounds
is
like it.
Something that's historically been really hard for me to feel.
Yeah, so how yeah. was it to feel that?
It feels amazing.
It feels amazing to feel that rage and
yeah.
that ferocious protector.
Yeah, it feels really good.
Yeah. Well, sounds great. Are you still feeling it?
To a less extent, because I'm not being asked every few seconds what my deficiencies are. But
if I were to ask you, it might come back.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so tell me a little more about feeling that ferociousness. What was it like? Or how is it? You know, what was the newness for you about that?
There's something new about the, like, the magnitude of it
mm-hmm.
Versus, like, the actual feeling, like, how big I can let it get.
Yeah. So you're able to let it get bigger than you had before.
Yeah.
Yeah. How big was it?
I don't know. I would say maybe like 10 or 20 feet.
10 or 20 feet tall?
Yeah. Around.
Around? Woo! That's pretty big.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
So that sounds like the kind of protection you would have liked to have had when you were little.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm kind of winding my way into my question, which is like, why would I want to feel that lack? But it makes sense to me that that's how I felt as a little kid, and it felt terrible, and I wanted to defend myself, and I couldn't.
Yeah.
And now there's a piece of me that's doing that.
Yeah. Right. So that's what I meant about we need to be at each point in the process. We can't look at the goal and say, oh, I should be there, or that's where I'm supposed to be. But where are we right now? And it may not be what seems to fit the map, but trusting your own process has a logic to it. There's some understanding that you can receive by just letting yourself have where you are. Mm-hmm. So this is what was there. And it might be clear that having that ferociousness and having that strength in yourself and knowing that it's available is crucial to have that before you can open to whatever else is there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And something in you knows in some way if you just go into the little part without contact with that bigness and that intensity and that protective quality in yourself, that it won't actually open up. It mm-hmm. won't actually allow something to come forward.
Yeah, it almost yeah. feels like it's re-traumatizing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. So particularly if there's been abuse or trauma, this is it's very important to honor what you notice in yourself. This will happen at its own pace. This isn't something to push. It's never something to push our process, but particularly this whole movement into our deficiency, our emptiness, is not something to push because there's all kinds of stuff wrapped up and around it for us. And if there's been abuse and or trauma, then that's a very important reason to respect that and really see what's needed to be where you are and see what your soul is asking for. And sometimes it is a kind of attention, a kind of holding, a kind of work that might seem like it's going almost in the opposite direction. That's fine if that's what your soul needs to do. There's no, it's not a straight line kind of affair. So I'm happy for you.
Thanks. That's helpful.
Yeah. Okay. Daniel?
I tend to go kind of blank on this stuff sometimes. Like that. This is the question from this morning that's still coming up now with the, it almost feels like, I think I heard that all, I guess what we could judge as negative emotions are pointers toward deficiencies or holes. And I'm wondering, if isn't everything pointing toward deficiency or holes? Because it's just all a fabricated personality anyway.
You mean everything in our normal life points towards a hole? Sometimes it feels like that.
It feels like the when I look, what's so scary is the holes. There's so many of them that it feels like there's not any substance that they're being.
Right, right. They're just this, the little areas around each hole kind of hooked up together, and most of it's empty space.
And like those pieces of Swiss cheese that there's no.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Yeah.
There is actually something called the Swiss cheese state.
There is?
Yeah. Where you're mostly aware of a whole lot of holes.
Yeah.
More than you are of anything solid. So, yeah, these are different ways to experience things. We're not necessarily trying to generate that this weekend, though it might feel like it.
Yeah.
We're more just talking about the dynamic and the process of working from the outward orientation towards the kind of drive underneath it, which often comes in reaction to the lack or the something missing. Mm. And we've talked about some holes already with different Lataev. We particularly spoke about it with the will. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be talking about it in relation to many other specific aspects, because there's a hole in some sense for most any aspect. But it's also true that the ego identity itself is built on reaction. Mm-hmm. That's what we talked about with the living daylight, and we're talking about it now in relation to the holes. It is built up on reaction, so in some sense, it's built on a big hole.
Yeah.
And so there are different kinds of holes, but one of them is the big hole underneath the ego. Mm. We sometimes call it ego deficiency. It's not a particular aspect. It's the whole sense that is possible to have at some point that everything about you, who you take yourself to be, is just covering a big gaping hole.
Yeah.
So we're not dealing with that right now. We'll have plenty of time in the future to when it feels more like relevant for most people to address that. But I'm just saying it because there's many different kinds of holes and ways that they can arise. Right now we're just kind of getting a sense of that feeling of the emptiness inside, that's where we're missing something, and what it's like to see its relationship to our functioning and to begin to orient toward feeling it more directly.
And for me, the experiencing of it, the experience of experiencing it, it's...
Can you hold the mic up a little?
The experiencing of it has been astounding with my teacher, but on my own, it's kind of difficult to go in there. And you caught my attention with the last thing you were saying there about not. This is not something to push.
Yeah.
What happens if you... I tend to push things.
Well, there's different possibilities. One is that if you push yourself, you might contract to resist it and just make yourself tighter. I mean, if you think about it, you know, you're over here trying to push some other part, it's just going to resist because it's not ready.
Yeah.
So that's often what happens, is that we just lock down and get tighter, and you might feel more stuck, more like harder and more... opaque and more dense, and it feels like it gets more and more difficult. So in general, that's why we talk about being where you are and just letting things be there, because it more invites things to open rather than trying to push on them.
I see.
There is a possibility for some people, if they're, because we all have different degrees of resistance in our structure, but some people maybe don't have a lot of resistance in their structure because of their history, that if you push, it could actually break something open earlier than it's ready. And that can also be very counterproductive. Like sometimes people talk about being re-traumatized, and that can be one kind of result of that, where something gets opened and wounded again because there isn't yet enough presence to hold it. Or that something, there's some kind of triggering feelings, flooding or overwhelm when there isn't a capacity to be with the experience. So that's another reason why we don't want to push. We want to trust that if we stay right where we are, then when we do open, there's a very good chance that there's enough capacity to be with what we're opening to, even if it's painful. But if we push ourselves into the opening, we may not be ready, and it might be too much, and then it could cause a backlash or cause some kind of emotional difficulty that might take a lot longer to overcome.
Can you elaborate a little bit on what not pushing looks like? When you, it's just, is it just a being with whatever it's exploring? It's doing inquiry, right? But you're, so that's a little bit of a push already, because it's easier not to look at all. That's the one.
It can definitely be easier not to look. That doesn't mean that looking is a pressure. Mm-hmm. But it does mean being sensitive to what's there. And if there's a resistance to inquiry, for instance, being curious to find out what the resistance is.
So whatever comes up, just
be
with that.
Yeah, and if you feel, some part of you feels like really uncomfortable about going into some part of your experience, it doesn't necessarily mean you don't go there, but at least the first thing you do is to explore what that resistance is, what that discomfort is. Try and get a sense of it, because it might tell you something needs attention before you can go there. Or it might say that, no, it's best to work on other things first because we're not ready yet. Or it might just be something that's not understood, and once it's understood, then you can go there. So there's many different possibilities, but you want to attend to what is actually there. If it's a resistance, attend to that. If it's a ferocious protection, attend to that. Don't have an idea that because we're talking about holes, you've got to find a hole and jump in. Okay. Brad?
I think I found myself experiencing something similar to what Lily was experiencing. And especially with the last question, I found myself getting really angry about the last question.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't even write it down correctly.
Uh-huh.
And so here I'm struggling with this question, and all I could feel was, you know, fuck you, Byron, for asking this question that I can't even really come up with an answer for, mm-hmm. and I'm feeling deficient around the question, and it's just, something was just, I even told the, you know, Lily who I was, the other Lily, where is she, who I was working with, said, you know, I'm really sorry to say this, but fuck you. And I just felt like I felt kind of like an animal with a leg caught in a trap.
Uh-huh.
You know, I just wanted to slash out at something. I had a real strong resentment to, I guess, being asked to walk in this direction.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Being given this question, which felt like, you know, I kind of felt like I was being duped into this direction in
uh-huh.
a way.
Uh-huh.
And I had a very strong reaction to it.
Uh-huh.
I feel really kind of angry uh-huh. and resentful around it.
Great.
And yeah, oh yeah. Gee, great. No, it feels very strong, and I don't like it. I'm not comfortable with it.
Oh, you don't like it?
No.
Oh, she liked it, but you don't like it.
I'm not having a good time with it.
Oh,
right now.
Okay.
No.
So what is it you don't like about it?
It's just, I guess I feel kind of at risk, you know.
Okay.
Like I say, you know, kind of like this animal in a trap.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I've got to get out of this trap.
Got it. Yeah.
And
yeah, yeah.
You know, I'm gonna chew my own leg off if I have to.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So it's more coming out of a desperate anger, kind of a desperate threat and desire to get away from it at all costs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Kind of. Very good. I also
feel kind of, you know, I feel sort of the sense of resentment, you know, towards you for like uh-huh. putting me in this position.
Okay.
And I just want to kind of like push you away.
Okay. I appreciate that.
It's just hard.
Yeah. So are you feeling it right now? Is it still here? Or do you feel more distance from it, or what?
It just feels painful right now.
Yeah.
I don't really feel the anger so much. It just feels really painful right now.
Like an ache or like some kind of burning or a cutting?
Just kind of a dull ache, you know,
in my
chest.
Yeah.
And it feels kind of sad.
Yeah.
It's just, it feels like it's a place that I don't want to go.
Yeah.
And I don't like being asked to go there. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, having, you know, Libby, you know, repeating the question, was just like, oh, fuck. Uh-huh. You know? Uh-huh. It was like getting beaten over the head.
Yeah.
Continually.
Yeah.
And I was just like, you know, I'm gonna rip your arm off if you keep beating me.
So I just want to note that the context, the form of being in the question, having it asked, seemed to bring, it sounds like an identification with somebody being forced into some place they didn't want to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's important to see that, because the question itself and even the context, you didn't have to do or go anywhere you didn't want to go, but it activated that, that identification. Yeah. And so clearly this is part of the instinctual juice, as Regina was talking about, that's kind of in there around even this idea of deficient emptiness, whatever it is, that it feels like a very life-threatening kind of
very threatening
territory for that part of you. Yeah.
And it feels like, you know, like I'm being kind of pushed into it.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like I kind of needed to, you know, defend myself around being pushed like that.
Uh-huh.
When I first started seeing my teacher, I even had a difficult time, you know, with her continually, like, you know, asking me questions and going further and going further.
Wanting to know what was going on with you. Yeah, right.
Just, you know what do you want? You know, like, you know, I don't know what the fuck you want. You know, I'm trying to answer the questions as best I can. And you know, you keep asking more and more questions. And
never satisfied with my answers.
Yeah, exactly.
Always
exactly,
another question.
Yeah. Exactly. And that was very familiar.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just kind of getting, you know, pushed more and more and more and more and more.
Yeah, so the repeating question really does that.
Yeah.
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 And we've done it twice today. No wonder you're...
So...
Yeah. Okay, so how is it now, having expressed this and just sharing it?
A little bit better, I suppose. It just kind of feels a little bit easier. You know, like maybe I've taken a step back from it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, getting a little bit more breathing room.
Mm-hmm.
I am curious about the sense of kind of the sense of resentment, you know, around it.
Yeah.
You know,
good.
Around being, you know, put in that position and you know, continually.
Yeah.
You know. And I feel like I feel more resentment towards you and towards the process, you know, than towards Lily, the person who was asking me the question.
Got it.
I think I feel more resentment towards the process and being asked to do it.
Yeah.
And being stuck in it.
Right.
And not being able to, not feeling like I could get out.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, so like, that seems important, is that part of that identity is feeling like I can't get out.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, you could have answered.
I don't want to answer the question.
Yeah, I've got nothing to say or whatever. But it activated this identity, and there's a certain kind of attitude and orientation and belief goes with that identity.
Mm-hmm.
And it... in some ways connected with this topic, it seems like, but it also sounds like it's a certain one you've encountered before in some ways around being asked, which is not specifically related to emptiness, it's just being asked.
Right.
So there's several factors here.
Yeah, it feels a little confusing.
Yeah,
you know.
So that's good, just to see, and you know, there's probably much more to understand yet about it.
Yeah.
But I'm glad you're curious about the resentment, and I mean, I think that's good, just to you can find some interest in this, yeah. even though it's uncomfortable. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, and then we'll come over here to Michael.
I found myself going through a process that challenged some of the basic conceptualization of this whole issue. As I've been sitting here, I see now that actually I don't feel as challenging towards it, but let me just articulate it. So let's say I have an experience that makes me feel deficient. So a typical thing for me is that I don't know enough. And if I don't know enough, I feel stupid. And that feeling of stupid makes me feel somewhat resentful or I feel hurt. I feel, what else do I feel? Well, let's just say for the moment, I just feel hurt by my lack, okay? Now, that's painful. And one thing that I can do is numb myself. I take a reflexive move, and then what I feel is deficient emptiness. It's a reaction to the pain. And then I'm off, you know, I call it cold sky, where I am empty in a reflexive maneuver from the pain. I feel the deficiency, but what I feel primarily is numbness and emptiness. And then It can accentuate, and I will feel nihilism. I feel an absolute sense that things are meaningless, you know, and that. So, one thing that occurred to me is that this sense of deficient emptiness is a kind of destructuring of myself from the reactivity of my personality, but I move into an isolated, numb state
right. Where
I'm in this little closet of nothingness,
right.
And I feel really adrift, and there's no, and my sense of the world has been really attenuated, and I feel like I'm under a jar, like Claudia said in our interaction. That's a different deficient emptiness from going into some primary thing that was missing,
right,
and that the compensation being a primary creative activity to cover that up.
Got it.
So I really want to make
that's a good point. That there's other kinds of emptiness,
right? It's still,
which
I mean, the words
dissociating,
dissociating. It feels deficient and it feels empty,
right?
But it's not this,
right?
What we're talking about here is some primal something that was missing or taken away.
It feels where you feel very connected to yourself.
Right.
In the sense that it's very much a part of you rather than becoming dissociated from yourself into something isolated. And
well, okay, there's the next step. So when I was sitting here thinking about this theory of holes,
yeah,
you know, on the surface it sounds... makes sense to me. I can see how I can interpret experience through deficiencies and compensations and things like that. I think that one thing I've had mystical experiences of unity where I look into a voidness that is actually a fullness, okay? Mm-hmm. And that fullness is full of these... I mean, if I were to sort of like unpeel the onion of that fullness, I would feel things like love. I would feel things like security or care or trust. Trust, yeah. Big, fundamental trust, right? Okay? And if those things get somehow, that sense get injured, then I'm in a much more attenuated sense of those same qualities. So when I have experienced my most fundamental sense of my own being, there is an emptiness right in the heart of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a full emptiness. If mm-hmm. That seems paradoxical. Mm-hmm. So, you know, to talk about the missing qualities as being the resurrection of fundamental essences is to talk about already a diminished sense of self. I think of those essences, you know, the feeling of strength, the feeling of clarity, as, you know, some of those things arise. Those things also feel like deficiencies to me when I compare it to that experience of profound unity, right? It feels like a deficiency. So what I'm driving at here is that there is a way in which this whole setup of this paradigm doesn't make sense to me, because what I feel is that it's like a continuum. I can see my compensations. I get into the heart of understanding how I make that compensation, and then a more true quality comes up, rising right out of the midst of it, and it's no longer just this little dualistic thing between what's true and what's false.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It doesn't feel like a dualism to me.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like I may be stuck in a formation, and that when I do an adequate inquiry, that formation opens up from the inside, and here is my false attitude on the top, and right underneath it is the true one that rises right out of the midst of the false mm-hmm. attitude. So it's no longer duality.
Mm-hmm.
You see? So I'm just...
But when you start, you're in duality.
I am, yes.
That's all we're saying. We're not saying anything about the final state of anything here. We're just talking about where we usually find ourselves and what some of the dynamics are in that process. But it's very much like you say, staying with it, being in it, being in touch with it, and it, when there's an openness and interest, at some point there's revelation, there's something that's revealed. So you're on track. You don't have to believe any of this. It's a theory. It's a form. It's a structure. So
as long as
useful.
I think it's a useful way to look at things.
Good. That's,
you know,
what
I'm
we're
finding it. And I'm just, I started this just by saying that I wanted to make that distinction, because yeah. I can get into states of tremendously deficient emptiness, mm-hmm. and it's not what you're pointing to. It's a numbness and a reaction to the pain of the primary deficiency, or that feeling of deficiency. Uh-huh. That's different. Uh-huh. So
thank you. Okay. Lots of discriminations that can be made here. One more over here.
I'm Jennifer.
Yes.
And I'm struck by an attitude that you talked about attitudes wrapping holes, and I'm struck by an attitude that seems to wrap a lot of my holes, which is that, oh, don't make a big deal of that. That's not important. Mm-hmm. Oh, you think you're so special. Kind of like, move on.
Get over it.
And I feel like that's, it comes up as well for me in some with the repeating questions. It's like, well, I just talked about something that was important to me, and uh-huh. then we moved on to the next question a little uh-huh. bit, that it so that the taste in my mouth is of, yes, none of this is really important, it's all completely normal, which is, I can hear my mother, you know, get over your own self.
Right. So you're saying the repeating question kind of supports that sense of, okay, move on, you answered that one, go on to the next
yes,
one.
Yes, I'm not really complaining about the question. I just noticed that that felt like, wait, I just talked about the fact that I feel like I, you know, my hole is that I shouldn't exist, you know.
Yeah.
That might have been important. Maybe I should have looked at that a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I noticed that I had that, you know, over the years doing repeating questions, because I've been doing them for a few decades now. So one way I work with that is I just, once they've asked the question, I just pick up where I left off in the last answer and just keep going. Mm-hmm. I don't, like, need to start over. I just kind of stay with the thread that I was on. So I might stay on that same thread for four or five times that they ask the question and just keep going further with it. Mm-hmm. So that's just one way of working with that. So you don't have to drop each thing that you've done, that you say, and drop it and go on to something totally else. You can stay with that thing, you know.
So just seeing the attitude.
Yeah.
And then I don't have to buy into the attitude.
Yeah. But it's good that you see that. Yeah, because that obviously makes it more difficult for you to settle and go deeper with any particular thing that you touch on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some of it is, okay, well, there's a person asking me this question, so for that person, I should let it go, like I did with my mom, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, okay.
Yeah, so we're seeing the projection onto the person and the way she's, all that gets set up really easily. Thanks. Yeah. Okay, one more. Sharif.
In answering Tell Me a Way You Experienced the Deficient Emptiness, one answer surprised me that I was hoping to get your comment on. One way I experience deficient emptiness is like this comfortable, old, cozy friend.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of like surprised by that.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like it's my oldest friend in the world. Mm. Sometimes even my only friend. Like that's kind of like...
Even if you lose everything else, you'll always have this.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And like there's this part of me that could just stay with that forever. Like it's not, I'm just like, was that deficient emptiness? Because that seems like I could just hang out and be depressed with my friend forever. You know? Or am I... It confused me because it didn't fit what I thought I should feel about deficient emptiness.
What should you feel about it?
I felt like this is cozy and
I know, but what do you think you should feel about it?
I don't know, scared or threatened or...
Okay, just notice the expectation then. It's true, I said a few things, but I didn't say what it should be. So I think that's good to notice that, you know, you may have set up for yourself an expectation that deficient emptiness is supposed to, it's a bad thing, first of all, right?
Right, yeah.
It's a bad thing, so you're not supposed to like it, and it's supposed to have difficult feelings around it and so forth.
Right.
Who knows? You might like it.
Well, I really do like
you
it.
Like, you do like it, yeah.
But that's kind of alarming to me. Like, another part of me is alarmed by that. No, seriously, Byron, like, if I like it so much that...
Yeah? What might happen?
My sense is it takes effort to not hang out, like, in this kind of depressed, cozy, comfy, friend, like, empty friend.
Uh-huh.
And so if I... My sense is if I didn't... like actively defend against feeling it.
Yeah, you just like go jump in and close the door and say goodbye to the rest of your life and just...
Yeah, like I would...
Yeah, you know. Why would you do anything?
And it would feel good.
Yeah, being cozy and...
Right. Okay, you're not going to answer my question.
Well, I think that there's more to explore there. How come it feels cozy? How come it feels like a friend? I mean, we're talking just about a state in your consciousness, in your body, physical manifest field, you know, but it seems like it has some qualities connected with it.
Right.
That go contrary to what you expected, but that as you notice them, you realize they're quite familiar and they actually have a power to them.
Yeah, a real draw to them.
Yeah. So that seems worth being curious about. What is that? Who are you in that place? I mean, you seem to have a belief about how it would affect your life.
Right.
So there's already that belief around it. Right. And there's certain associated qualities. So there might be more you could learn about this way you experience it, where it came from, what's more of the history of it. In a way, you didn't know it before, but now you realize you've always known it, so... How so? Well, you know, just being curious about some of these elements, because it's probably more you could learn, and it might seems like there's a certain identification that you're actually you're describing. I will just go into it. I will like it, and then I won't do anything else. And that's that scares me.
Right.
So. There's a belief that you will become a certain way.
Right.
you will be a certain thing. That's what I mean by an identification.
Right.
So it would be interesting to find out what that identity is, what you can learn about it.
Without acting it out? Like, how do I find out without giving into it?
Well,
does that make sense?
Like, you keep sensing your arms and legs while you experience it.
Okay.
So you can keep some presence that can be interested and open to it without becoming one with it. Okay. You might initially become one with it and not be have any disidentification, have any separation from it. And maybe you can do that with your teacher and they can be the one being disidentified and ask you questions. And then if you work with sensing yourself, that's what we do to keep some presence when we're experiencing things, to help us have a little disidentification so that we can begin to look at this place that we're in. So it might be a gradual process to begin to learn more about this and see if there is something attached to the deficient emptiness, because it sounds like maybe there is with this identity. That maybe gradually could be discriminated from the
place.
Yeah,
I mean, it sounds like it sounds really like a very kind of risky, dangerous thing to explore or
okay.
to come near.
But so that's a good place to start.
Yeah.
This is scary, and I'm not sure what it'll do to me if I were to really open up to this.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. These are significant places in us, and people are talking about that in different ways, whether it's needing to protect against what happens in a very energetic way or being pretty pissed off at being pushed into this place or just being a little anxious about how much you might like it. So, yeah, there's a lot here. Appreciate
Thanks.
It. Okay, we need to stop. Do we have any announcements? Oh, I want to introduce somebody. I'm sorry we didn't do it early in the day. Rebecca Brombach, that's still your last name, right? has joined us this weekend. She's been a longtime member of the school. She's been in a couple of other groups before, but her group ended a little while ago, and she's trying to find what group makes sense for her, and she's very interested in the possibility of joining us. She's a long-time practitioner, but a beginner, too. She's been here this weekend, so I just wanted to introduce her. And if you want to say hello to her, and we don't know quite what the future is at the moment with her and the group, but we're happy to have her here this weekend. So, okay, so wish you all... Lily... got an announcement.
I'm going to be handling the MP3s from now till further notice, so you can talk to me or email me at dh7mp3@gmail.com for anything related to MP3s. Thanks.
Okay. Christine?
Hi, we could use one more volunteer for tomorrow afternoon lunch. If anyone's willing to help us out, let me know.
With the Awaken Cafe. Lily, maybe? Okay. All right. Hope you have a good evening and be gentle with yourself wherever you are. We'll see you in the morning.